Life. My table.
Dignity.
Security.
Free.
Young.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Justice.
Just this. Just this.
Just this.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Succession.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Losers.
Men.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression.
Expression,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
work,
leisure,
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 health,
education,
culture,
culture,
human rights,
Charter of Dana,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM. We can also be heard on Sastel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and my special guest today is Dan Lindsay, who's been working to make positive change for disadvantaged people who've been falling through the cracks in our social safety net. And, we've been doing that for a while, Dan.
Yeah.
Good to have you here.
Hitting 6 years now, I've been on the streets, so it's been a while.
Right, so I thought it was time for us to kind of get together and catch up and see what's happening.
I've outlived my life expectancy. You know, 6 years on the streets, it's, usually people get it in for 2 years and that's enough, so.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I mean, the work is always there, unfortunately.
It just keeps compounding and compounding.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going away.
No. Are you seeing some good stuff happen? I mean, is there a light at the end of this tunnel?
At the end of, with the poverty and the economy and the rent and all that, no. And then, but there is... I just love to slam the government, but I have to say, with the whole lean thing, there's so much wrong with it, but there's so much good coming out of it too, because I see it firsthand.
Right.
There is some good stuff coming out of it. If you want to slam something, then you better be prepared to salute it when they do good too. Right. So there is changes coming. Mm-hmm. Not for me, it's just too slow, mm-hmm, like when you get into something like healthcare system or education system, these are just such big, huge monsters, right? Like, and so many people and so many things involved, so to change something kind of small mm-hmm. can take a long time. And like with me and my work, I might have three meetings planned for the day, and then when you walk in, there's all these crises, so everything is just... You have to switch everything up. You have to just, fast, dance around and deal with things. So I'm used to seeing results or trying to get results right here, right now, because the problem's here right now. Where you get in, it doesn't matter any institution, even a big company is the same thing, right? You have to go through it. But there is changes, you know, there's some coming. So that's been positive.
Mm-hmm.
The whole housing thing,
yeah,
not so much.
Right. I don't know. I guess I'm wishful thinking here, Dan, but I'm looking at all the housing that's being built. You know, we got apartment buildings, we got condos, we got houses and all over the place. Eventually, we've got to see some slack in the housing market, and that's got to drop some prices down.
If that happens. But you also seen, because like it's one thing, you know, coming from Toronto and Vancouver and other cities I've been to and lived in, in Regina and a lot of places on the prairies, these older homes, that we have in our communities, these were ripped down and rebuilt, 30, 40 years ago in these, most other Canadian cities. So what I see is a lot of that happening.
Okay.
But that's increasing the prices,
right?
And even doing what I call, Regina renovations, slapping up some vinyl siding and putting in some laminate flooring doesn't change the nature of the house itself. Right. The basement's falling in, it's black mold, old plumbing, wiring. And then we jack the price up again, to rent that just for the, eye candy that they splatter around. If it continues, the economy, and we continue to grow, that could be something, but I don't see that in the foreseeable future. And even right now, the last year, they've been very quiet about it. But our market here in Regina has, slowed down and is dropping. So you're going to see prices dropping. And my sister just bought a place here. From 279,000 or 289,000 to 279,000, they dropped 10 grand. That's still total fantasy for anybody that's disabled or living on social services or homeless.
Even minimum wage. Sure.
I make a little more than minimum wage, and I can't make my bills meet.
On that topic, I have to talk about Washington State. We got a little bit of when you see something happen in another jurisdiction, you have to think, well, maybe somebody's going to get the hint here. But in Seattle, they talked about a $15, and they've decided to go with a $15 minimum wage, but they're phasing it in gradually.
Yeah.
But then there was another little community, I think, SeaTac or something like that, close to Seattle. They looked at it and said, oh, that's a good idea. Let's do it now. And they did.
Yeah.
And the sky has not fallen.
It won't. It never does.
The businessmen in that part of the world, are running scared and all the rest of it. But what's happened in that small town is expansion.
Well, it will, because
the economy is booming.
What do they do, this trickle down economy thing? Well, they got it upside down. It's a trickle up economy.
Yeah.
I don't have money to go out and go to Houston's for dinner.
Sure.
Like, that's just doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
And if it does, it's like once in a blue moon, and it's got to be a special reason. But, if I had extra money, then I will be going to the coffee shop.
Sure.
I will be going, out for dinner or burgers or whatever. So it's a trickle-up economy.
Yep.
And I can't see, businesses that are scared of this. It's a little rocky to begin with, but it peters out. It creates more business. If we don't have any money to spend, how can we stimulate the economy?
Exactly.
And we're just in survival mode. Basically, it's, 60, 70, 75% of your wage is going to pay for a house.
Hmm.
And everything else has to come out, the 30, 25%. And that's what it's like.
Yeah.
How can anybody live off $100 a month for all your food and transportation, and it's just crazy.
What amazes me is this is not a new concept.
Henry
Ford is famous for being audacious enough to pay his people $5 a day back when five bucks a day was huge.
Yeah.
But he was thinking, gee, if I give them enough money, they can buy one of my cars.
Well, that's it. What is it? A captured audience, right? It just goes that way, right?
They'll want a car, and they'll buy one.
But that's true. And the economy is, it's always, and this one thing that we still, saying, oh, we're in a boom. And I lived through, and you know, I moved from Vancouver to Toronto, Toronto to Vancouver, and back and forth up north, chasing the booms.
Right.
And what we don't talk about here is after a boom, there's always a bust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when things, well, that's when you do see the drop in the housing markets and that and rents, because now you've built all these things and now mm-hmm. they're all empty, because all the people that came here for work, they're all going to leave.
They're going to the other boom.
Well, they're going to the next boom, right? Yeah. And now you're going to have that glut. And that's where people end up losing houses. They mm-hmm. they bought into a market, they bought a house, it's, you know, the mortgage is this rate, you know, and we're renting it out. Well, you know what, rents aren't $1,200 anymore, they're $800. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't afford to pay my mortgage now, you know, on that house. Because, and then you have all these guys that, you know, they go to the oil fields and stuff, or mm-hmm. become laborers in construction. I'm making $20-$25 an hour for 2 or 3 years and life is good,
mm-hmm.
but I have no education and I have no skills outside being a laborer or something. Well, now you have 500 of us applying for that $10 an hour job at McDonald's, if you're not going to do that, because, mm-hmm. or now you're forced to follow the boom. So it's, you know, it's one of the, people got to wake up, because the booms don't last,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And of course, you know, the bottom line really is education, you know.
We got to have the education, and you got to be flexible too. You got to mm-hmm. be able to jump into a couple of different jobs if you have to,
right.
You know, and you got to do what what we have to do to pay the rent and pay the bills, right? So, but it's the same thing like in housing. You know, my job right now, you know, working with, you know, people with addictions and homeless people, you know, finding places to house them. And now, you know, the economic discrimination, you know, from the landlords. I can't tell you you're on welfare or disability on said program that, you know, I'm not going to rent to you. But I, you know, what they're doing now is saying, well, we don't want the guarantee, the letter of guarantee for the damage deposit from social services. We want cash.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to say no to that when you got 4 other people lined up with cash in hand, you know, people coming into work. We have working people living in shelters because they have no place to live, but they have jobs and they mm-hmm. can't find a place to live.
Right.
So, you know, you're seeing a whole different type of homelessness, you know, working homelessness, you know,
mm-hmm.
And we really see that down, you know, the Southwest, you know, down, you know, Weyburn and all those places, right? You really see mm-hmm. a lot of Carlisle, a lot of that stuff, people living in cars, you know, mm-hmm. but they got a job,
right?
And they got money,
right?
They have no place to live,
right.
So what I ended up, I had a friend that had an older house and it was kind of run down. And anyway, I was just so frustrated because I had no, you know, it's like a multitude of people that are, you know, homeless and need housing and safe housing.
Right.
Because we come through detox and mm-hmm. a treatment center or something, then we go back to where we came from, and it's a crack house.
Sure.
Well, that's not very lean. That's, you know, we're just spending all this money and sending the guy back into the fire and say, mm-hmm. good luck.
Yeah.
So we have to put somebody where they can be free of those enticements right in your own home, right?
Sure.
So we ended up renting this house, 4-bedroom. We got 4, it just kind of opened at September 1st. We didn't have hot water. We had to do some work on the gas. So the first week we had no heat and no hot water. There was still broken windows, mm-hmm. you know, and took a month just to clean the place up and get it ready and painting it up. And today we got 4 people housed at welfare rates,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
they're not getting rental supplement or anything. It's at a welfare rate,
right.
And it's a peer support, clean and sober living environment,
right.
And they're doing awesome so far. And part of it was, if you want to live here, well, here's a paintbrush,
yeah.
you know, and start loading the stuff in the truck because we got to haul it to the dump, you know.
Yeah.
I took out like 4 pickup trucks full of garbage in one of those half-size dumpsters, right, just mm-hmm. to clean the place up. And part of it was, you know, me giving the finger to, you know, the establishment, because it's like I can say, well, look, I have no money, no mm-hmm. budget, no funding, no
right.
nothing.
Right.
And we can house 4 guys in a safe, sober environment with some supports there in the environment, because as long as they come through my work, I can do supports for them. And they do most of their own support because they support one another going to NA or AA or any mm-hmm. of these other things that they're involved with. And, you know, the idea they get back working and all these things, and they're paying taxes, and we get them integrated back in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to stabilize them and keep them safe in a good, safe, warm, loving environment. So that was kind of my frustration of, you know, just saying, you know, we, you know, with our 10-year plan for homelessness here in Regina is to basically in 10 years we'll have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
There is some good things coming out of there, but it could be a lot better and a lot more and done a lot faster. We don't need to study these things as we go back into. Every city studied these things 20 years ago. Like, look at Vancouver. Mm-hmm. They just did, they had the Quality Inn right at Granville and Robson,
mm-hmm.
which is probably for, you know, a 10 by 10 room to live there is, you know, $1,800 a month, that, you know, area right downtown Vancouver. 157 units, and it's slated. They've closed it. It's slated to be just, you know, torn down, and there's a big skyscraper condo going to go up there. But that's in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the city and the province of BC,
mm-hmm.
they've rented it at $66,000 and change a month, which works out to $425 a room. below our welfare rates, we get $459 here. Mm-hmm. Here it is, and you can't rent a room in outside of a crack house in Regina for under, you know, $600, $500 a month. And they're going to run it for homeless people for 2 years, and then, mm-hmm. you know, have them in there, and it's like, well, you know, it doesn't solve the problem, but it gets people off the streets right now.
For 2 years.
Once you have them there, then you can bring in supports.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, if it's, you know, be it doctors, you know, psych nurses, addiction workers, social workers, whatever, and you can make contact now that people are stable and in one place. Right. And then within that 2 year time, you have them housed and hopefully, you know, find permanent housing and things for them. But we got to do initiatives like that. Like, mm-hmm. We don't have 2 years to make a decision and sit around and talk about it. The place is going down. You grab it now, you fill it later, mm-hmm. and we'll worry about where the supports come from. Because all of the supports are being paid for. Mm-hmm. They're paid for in all the different departments around the province, corrections, hospitals, mm-hmm. nurses. Yeah. They're all paid for already. They're all hired.
Mm-hmm.
Just means shuffling some things around sometimes.
Right.
And dealing and being able to dance on your feet. You know, mm-hmm. The powers that be, it just takes too long. By the time you come up with a decision, the opportunity, you know, left 3 months ago, right? So,
mm-hmm.
So those are good things that we got to start doing and looking at, you know.
But I get the impression talking to you, though, that there are a lot of people at the sort of the pointy end of these, the pointy end of these organizations, who see the kind of progress that you're making with your group of people that are working hard to do this. And they're doing the best they can to get your resources.
Yeah. Well, with the different places where I work and that, mm-hmm. my immediate supervisors and bosses, up to, you know, some high-ranking bosses,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. and that's it, because we can sit on the street, which I did for 20 years, you know, like burn down the buildings, right? Like, you know, hammering on the doors, right? But now I'm on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And working on the other side.
Right.
Like, I have, where I work, I have the most open and straightforward communication with my bosses that anywhere else I probably would have been fired a long time ago.
Right.
But that's what gives me my respect for these guys and ladies. And, but they got to work up the ladder too.
Mm-hmm.
And the ladder goes all the way up to, you know, I guess the premier's office, right?
And it gets harder and harder.
So you get all these levels and levels and levels and, you know, they can appreciate the way I may come in and talk to them, you know, or maybe not appreciate, but we can have that communication.
Right.
But, you know, you can't do that up at those other levels. And then you got to have the data, you got to have the sources and, you know, the support stuff to back up what it is you're asking mm-hmm. for. And then it's just, like I said, it's just such a big system. It's hard to move around. And that's what this whole lean thing that they came out with was to try to alleviate some of that stuff, right?
So some of that is streamlining communications.
Yeah. Oh, there's some stuff in lean that's just totally stupid, and I'll be the first one to say, and if anybody gets upset, oh, that's okay. But there's some stuff that's coming out of there is like, bang, yeah, right away. The one thing that it is doing, and I try to remind them, is when they do a decision with the lean thing, it happens overnight. Once that's done, it's implemented right away. And it's like, wow, now let's just start doing this in our day-to-day work.
Right? Yeah.
You know, instead of, you know, dragging things on. So those things, but the only problem is like sometimes, you know, it's, some of the things just take too long, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when you're homeless and hungry and you're on the street right now,
right,
tomorrow is a long, long time.
Right.
you know.
So, and what we're seeing right now is we're still seeing that the problems multiply.
Like, yeah, yeah. It's
like things are getting, in the grand scheme of things, yeah, we see some progress in some areas, but it's not happening fast enough to match the growth of the problem.
The bottom line is, I don't care if it's a health-related issue, diabetes, schizophrenia, addiction, drug addiction, prostitution, all these things, right? All these things are also interconnected. It all peeled back the layer of the onion. If you do not have a permanent place to go home to every day, every night, we can't deal with them successfully. Because once you remove that foundation of a place where you can go home and be safe and secure and have a place to sleep and eat, then I become like the shark. Like, people don't realize, we take for granted just going to the bathroom. Now, you know, as men, we can go up to a tree if you have to have a pee. Can we say pee on the radio?
I think we
okay.
did.
I think we did. Okay, you know, but what happens if you have to do what is a number two and you're home? There is no place. You're not allowed to go into a restaurant.
Yeah.
So, like, just to have a morning bowel movement becomes a major, major obstacle. You go in the malls, the security guards chase you out. You try going into the Delta Hotel, and you ain't going in there. So you have to, you know, it's a two-hour adventure just to find out where you can go to the bathroom. Yeah.
Summertime, you got the park washrooms.
Yeah, okay, yeah, you do
but
that.
But that's about it.
Yeah, but, you know, and then, you know, that's why Carmichael we put in the shower and stuff there, right? But so, like, little things, like, people don't even think of, they just take for granted, right? Or, you know, you wash your face. Well, you know, I got no place where I'm going to wash my face, right?
Yeah.
So once you take that, it changes. And then what am I going to eat? Where am I going to sleep tonight? So getting a job or signing up for a training program or dealing with my addiction or whatever my problem might be or what I'm trying to deal with or what, you know, my social worker and my counselor want me to do, they all automatically, instinctively go to the back burner because I got to survive today.
Sure. What's your phone number, by the way?
Mine?
I mean...
Oh, yeah. Well, no, yeah. Well, that's the other thing. We finally got that because even when we do have phones, it's cell phones, those few that have them, and then they're, you know, it's text only, and then it's the minute thing, and, you know, towards the end of the month, there's no communication, and so, you know, and we have to get out into the streets. You have to be, that's where the work is, right?
Yeah.
Expecting people to try to get around, it's just so hard, and with winter coming, it's just a hundredfold harder, you know, once it becomes minus 40 and 3 feet of snow.
Yeah, the housing first just makes so much sense.
It does. And we got to, and that's why I say it's just so crazy because places have been doing it for 20 years. And then what's also come out of that, you know, like out of Toronto and you know, even the bit out of Vancouver and stuff and out of New York is, you know, after 10 years of running these things, then we've seen what the problems are. Right, or they see, well, this, you know, didn't go according to plan. So, like, again, Saskatchewan, we are such a great position. We don't have to spend $5 million on a program that we're going to find out that didn't work in any other city in North America. So why are we trying it? Like,
yeah,
it ain't.
Yeah.
Oh, but we're flatland. Has nothing to do with it. Oh, you know, we got colder winters. Nothing to do with it. You know, very few things are affected by, our, you know, where we are. We can just say, okay, well, we're not going to do that. Let's just pick up this one because this one's working. Yes, we can fine-tune it to, like, well, you know what? We can't have, you know, a tents, you know, for homeless people there because of our winters, so you fine-tune that. But it's and again, I have to say, the only reason this Quality Inn thing in Vancouver is happening is because of the homeless people, of their protests. They've taken over Oppenheimer Park down in East Van. They live in their tent city right down, and they ain't going away. Just like when I was at, we did the squat, the Woodward squat. You know, we're there for 2.5 months, you know. That's the only time we get movement. You know, and that's, I don't understand why we have to wait for, you know, powers to be to respond in a positive way.
Right.
That we actually have to go and occupy buildings and have mass protests and all these things because the problem's still the same.
Right.
And the problem, and we know about the problem. We've always known, you know, so let's just do something about it, right?
Right. I just, and of course, the thing that I have the hardest problem with is where our priorities are. Like, and I hate to mention this, but how much money are we spending on the stadium? How long is it going to take for us to pay?
I don't even want to go there. I don't. I just, like, my sister and I, we bought a house here.
Yeah.
And I moved from, you know, 4th Avenue North and Albert area down into, you know, just off McKay and College. And I just noticed, right, and almost $1,000 a year on the tax. I am paying like $600 a year more here than you do in Vancouver or Toronto, right? Yeah, yeah, it's like crazy. And then I notice, I heard this noise, this grinding and a big machine noise. And I go out, and here's this guy with a machine, and where the sidewalks, you know, where they heave and they form a lip, he's grinding them all down. So it's smooth, so you don't trip or anything. And I went, wow. My old house, 5 years, when that all happens, about every 8 years they come by and they throw some black tar on top, some asphalt over the top. And then you know what we do in the hood. You know, it's like, it's crazy. You know, where you live depends, you know, about what kind of services you're getting, you know. And that, you know, kind of, I think is kind of inherently wrong. A pothole's a pothole no matter what neighborhood it's in.
Yeah.
And their taxes. And the whole stadium thing is just, you know.
I just want to touch on that in passing.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's all that money going there, and a fraction of that money going in this direction would make such a difference.
Well, I'm still waiting, because when this whole stadium thing got going and everybody jumped on this bandwagon, do you remember all the social housing that was to be built? And then it went, got put off, and then all the social housing, oh yeah, we are going to do that, but that's going to be in 20 years after the stadium. And then I don't hear anything about the social housing, because we've now moved the whole location of it, and they aren't going to be putting social housing up on the exhibition grounds. So, and you can bet your sweet butt when Taylor Stadium comes down, you know, like, even when they got that land from the, on the Dewdney, that's a huge, massive hotel now. There was no reason why that building could not have been a social housing building right now, low income. You know, but no, so I have no faith in that whole deal. And wait till the cost overruns come. You know, you look at this housing one with, what was that, Doval, the housing corporation, building the 48 units that they pulled out of the deal. They were supposed to be low-income housing that was under the Sask housing plan, right?
Yep.
And it was $400,000, which they offered to split with the government. $200,000, you know, the cost overrun. I totally get it from the government point of view. If I, you know, like, it was nothing. It's what these guys spend on a luncheon, you know, to throw in the $400,000 and have the housing. But if they did that once, now all these other things where you bid on a government contract, then we're going to be all, you know, now it's $4 million that you got to cough. It goes on and on.
But they had a contract. They
had a contract, and they could have nailed them to the wall on that. And I'm, hey, I'm not, you don't want to do that? You know what? You don't get a business license to operate in this province, so you can move somewhere else. Like, I'm pretty, if I was King Boy, you know, you want to do business here, then you got to get back into the social support of the community. But at the same time, we've lost all that housing. Any of that other housing won't be on for another 2 or 3 years. It's great to say build a place. If we were to start today to build a place, you know, it's a year. It's a year and a half just to get through the paperwork before we even put a hole in the ground. Then we got to build it, right? And then we got to put the people in it. So, like, you're talking 2-3 years before anything happens, and that's just way too long.
No, Dan, we're at the bottom of the hour here now, and we have to do a station break.
Cool.
So let's do that. And you picked some great music from the band. We're going to come out of that.
I think it's the 40th anniversary, so, you know, it's a good band. Good.
All right, so we'll be right back. And we're back. I think I'll talk about Radiothon first, then we'll go to the song.
Sure.
And that's starting, by the way, today.
Yeah, 4 o'clock, isn't it?
4 o'clock. We've got a special radio show with Ben Valiaho and special guests. And between 4 and 6, people who pledge, they have a chance to jump the line at Bushwhacker on December 6th, I think it is, for their Blackberry Mead.
Ooh.
So instead of having to line up, you just get 6 bottles of Blackberry Mead.
That can't beat that.
You can't. So there you go. And there's also a chance to get a $100 gift certificate from Tony Roma's. And one other thing that I have forgotten, and it's not here. Oh, well.
But it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah. Absolutely. And, of course, then you get in on all the daily draws from, you know, for the, yeah, the week coming up. So it's excellent.
So come out and buck up.
Absolutely. And tonight we're going to kick things off at, where are we going to be? The Artful Dodger. At the Artful Dodger, and we're going to have Andino Sons and Alex Runyons and Davin and Judd from the Bystander. Showtime is 8:30 this evening. Admission by donation to CJTR Radiothon 2014. And if you want to get all the details, check www.cjtr.ca. And here's your chance to support your favorite radio station. Anyway, let's go to some music here right now. And this is the band. And what's the title?
The Wait.
The Wait.
Just to call ourselves the band.
I pulled into Nazareth just feeling about half-assed dead. Just need to find a place where I can lay my head. Mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned and shook my hand. No was all he said. Take a load off Fanny. Take a load to freeze. Take a load off Fanny. And you put the load right on me.
I picked up my bags and went looking for a place to hide. When I saw old Carmen and the devil walking side by side, I said, hey Carmen, come on, let's go downtown. She said, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around.
Take a load off Fanny, take a load for free.
That you can say it's just old Luke, and Luke is waiting on the judgment day. Hey Luke, my friend, what about a young Anna Lee? He said, do me a favor, son, I want to stay and keep an Anna Lee company. Yeah.
Take a load off Fanny, take a load for free. Take a load off.
He said, I will fix your rack if you take old Jack, my dog. I said, wait a minute, Chester, you know I'm a peaceful man. He said, that's okay, boy, won't you feed him whenever you can, come on.
Take a load off, Fanny. Take a load for free. Take a load off.
Take a load off Fanny.
Take a load for free. Take a load off Fanny.
And
put the load right on me.
And that's all there is.
Awesome song.
We're waiting for the last chord there, and it doesn't come.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Classic stuff. Classic. Yeah, it's funny, Dan, whenever I have you on the show here, I never exactly know who you're working for. Or I know what you're doing, but I...
Well, the easy answer is I work for Creator.
Oh, okay.
You know, he put me on my path, you know, when I come out of my addictions, right? And, so had a about face in life. So it's about, you know, supporting the community, right? And that's what it should be about, you know?
Absolutely.
That's just my personal view, though.
Sure.
Yeah. So when it comes to answering, it's like the Time Walkers, eh? We answer to a higher power and, you know, just do what we do.
Right.
Yeah.
But if we want to get a little more specific.
Oh, yeah, that. Okay, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm still with the health region.
Right.
I still work out of addiction services as transitional outreach. I do shifts with street culture kids at the shelter after work. So those days are like, you know, 8 till 11. I'm a board member with Carmichael. Again, I was on the board before and took a break. Still on with the Urban Aboriginal Strategy, UAS, sit on that committee. What else? I do a group for APSS on Thursday evenings. And I think, that's it. going back to when we rented this house and we fixed it up and opened it up, it was just to be a one-shot deal because I had no place to put these guys, right? And so we got this house and got them there and everything's good. But the need is so great, I just went, you know, and Creator put three awesome guys in my path as this was happening. So this has been, we're all doing the work. We're it, right? We're the painters, we're the glass guys. We just put in new doors the other day and which is really good for recovery when we're in recovery. That's what we're supposed to be doing, not just hanging around and doing nothing.
Right.
It's getting productive, and it gives us ownership in this house. We're building a home, not a house, this is their home. They built it and living while we're renovating, and so they've got a vested interest. So I thought a lot because I've been so burned out. I had a big crash and burn this year because I do so much, and I just said, as of September 1st, a long weekend, I'm just, that's it. I do security at the Brandt Center too.
Okay.
I'm doing that Monday. Godsmack, yeah. I just so burned out that I was just like, I have to wind down everything for the winter, self-care,
right.
Go get back into ceremony, get back into sweats and things, which I've been doing, which is good. But this house is just such a need. It was like, I can get all kinds of these houses. I can do this. I can get 10 of these things going, right? But there's no money, no funding, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I decided to talk to a few people and decided that over the winter I'm going to incorporate, and it's a House of Songs. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a House of Songs Recovery Homes. And House of Songs comes from is all of us, every human being, we're born with a song. Some of us know it from the time we're born. Some of us spend our whole life and never find it. And some of us, through our journey, to rediscover that song. So... I'm hoping this home and these people move in, and you know, eventually, I guess we're gonna have to have a women's home. It's a peer support home. There's no staff or anything. This is your home. And you're just living with people that are supporting each other in their quest to on their recovery road, walking the red road, and it's safe. You come home from work, you don't have to worry about people going crazy and parties and drinking and drugs. It's clean, safe environment. So. This home, I was working with a guy, and I still get really choked up. It's really fresh. I've been working with him for a little while, but anyways, I think I got like 17 dead this year so far, and it weighs pretty heavy on the soul. And you make connections with people, and I never call my clients, they're my friends. You know, as soon as you say the word client, even on the subconscious, you've created this hierarchy of power, and I just, get rid of that garbage, right? You know, we're all suffering from addictions. Some fresh, some, I'm going 19 years now. But, we're still, I always know where I come from. Anyways, he ended up, he passed away. I wanted him to move into this house, like, because the house was, I was cleaning up the house and all this stuff, and, you know, it was basically sort of, kind of, like I said, minus the hot water and the heat and a couple of windows.
Yeah.
It was ready September 1st, and he passed away August 31st.
Oh.
So, anyways,
how old a guy would he be?
I think he was 34, you know, really young. And then, you know, and it was really hard for me because I'd worked with him, and then his family came out from Vancouver, and I had to spend time with his dad, and it was just very, you know, well, just hard losing a friend, but, you know, then dealing with the family and the funeral and that. And we were talking in the past, earlier this year, you know, up in the hood, right, in North Central, you know, talking with people at APSS and mostly All Nations because, you know, we lose so many of our people. And sometimes, you know, two a week, you know, through whatever, you know, car accidents, you know, stabbing, you know, overdoses. But if you peel it all back, if you go back to the beginning, the root of it all, the root cause of it all, it comes into our addictions and drugs and alcohol. Some were always involved on some level, right? Be it drunk driving or the violence associated with dealing drugs or, you know, it's the root of it. And we were saying, you know, like, you know, we lose them so fast, and it's never in the papers, you know, it's never in the papers or anything, that, you know, I may not forget, but we can't keep track of it all. And it was like, that's why I said, you know, that they're doing the homeless count, HPS, said, you don't need to do that. You want to get some real cold, hard fact stats. And this one's really easy to follow because we have death certificates and everything. Count the dead. And count how they died, you know, then you'll get numbers. And those numbers, it would be very frightening to society if they were to hear it. You know, like when we go in there, Aunt Mary, she died from kidney failure in the hospital. Well, she was diabetic, yeah. And was she drinking? Well, she's still drinking. Well, no, that's not death by kidney failure.
Yeah.
That was the cause. That was an alcoholic death.
Sure.
You know, like in the car accident, a tragic car. No, there was a drunk driver hit the car. That family of five with a little baby, never even saw a bottle of booze, died an alcoholic death. Call it what it is.
Yeah.
Don't, yeah. You know, and then when we start adding up those numbers, then people, that would just make people jump. Because for every one of those deaths, there's a, you know, 20 that aren't yet, right? So anyways, this house, we decided we're going to call it the House of Joshua. And I'm going to get incorporated and saying I'm going to open a new one in the spring, which probably just by the way that I do things will be Christmas. Get one for Christmas. Why not? But again, you got to be careful because, you know, these, you know, can quickly turn. It's a full-time job once you get four or five houses going up. But then I know I have people that, you know, upstairs that watch me and watch what I'm doing. And hopefully they see it's like, hey, I am the leanest guy in the whole province. The Scottish part of me, you know, I watch those pennies, right? Mm-hmm. And like, and if we can do everything without having to increase welfare rates or, you know, like right now we can pay for this stuff, you know, basically off, you know, cheaper than what we're getting on a welfare allotment for rent. And that's just this one, right? And trying to keep it down that way. But, you know, who knows? Because this house is already, the next house is already full before you even have the concept of it. Mm-hmm. And it's, we could use with it, you know, a dozen of these homes. And, they don't have to be brand new homes with brand new furniture and everything. We got was we got our beds through the Sleep Country program. We got furniture. My guys, I told you, I got these guys. They're awesome. They're on their cell phones doing Kijiji and Regina. It's like, hey, okay, yeah. Well, this guy, they got a 50-inch projector TV, color free. But we had to go and move it. That's right, the thing. Right, they'll give away as long as you come move the thing, right?
Right,
so we get the truck and go over, and we got this big TV in the house, and you know, all this stuff. It just takes a little bit of effort, a little bit of work, and you know, you have to line things up. Okay, who can get a truck and get this stuff? So everything we've done in this house has been through donations and you know, and you know, well, I got extra blankets. You know, Carmichael's been a big supporter, you know, because I, you know, I need, you know, single beds, right, which are really hard to come by.
Sure.
But, you know, then to get this, the bedding for them. So, you know, you just ask the ladies, they set it aside. And, You know, we got everybody on the food bank getting stabilized, and I got one guy who's working now, and you know, it's good. So I think that's what I'm going to be doing over the winter. As I said, I was retiring for the winter to hibernate, is working on House of Song recovery homes too, just within our community. And that's basically just to, it addresses many different issues, but it, you know, the housing, the homelessness, it, mm-hmm. now you have a house, right?
Yeah.
And it's the recovery, right? You know, the dealing with our addictions. Mm-hmm. Because it's no sense going through detox, going to a treatment center, you know, boom, boom, boom. Hey, there's $25,000, $30,000 right there. And then when I get out, I got to go back to where I came from,
yeah.
which is a crack house where everybody's drinking, and because there's nowhere else to go, and then expect me to live there. It's really easy, you know, to tell people, say, oh, you just have to say no. So if I run into you to the street and you're offering me drugs and booze, and it could be tempting, I can say no and I'm walking away. But when I have to live in it 24/7, I wake up to it in the middle of the night to the parties. I, you know, sooner or later, I don't care who you are, how strong you are. Sooner or later, 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month, you know, you're mm-hmm. going to take that beer. You're going to take that, you know, take that drug, right? And then we're back to where we started, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We really have to align. You know, it's good to go through treatment and all that. You know, strongly recommend it. But we also have to have safe, sober places for people to stay.
Yeah, you need the next step.
Exactly, and if we don't have the next step, then all we're doing is we're hamster on the wheel, and mm-hmm. we just keep doing it, and that's what you hear saying, oh, well, Jim, you've been here 5 times already.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's got to go back to the same place.
Yeah.
So, and he's going to be here another 5 times until we can break that cycle.
Right.
And that's the whole missing piece. The housing, you know, they talk about it as a human right. I won't even get into arguing about mm-hmm. that, right? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Without having a stable foundation and housing, and that could be a room, an apartment, or a mansion, or a tent even, if it's your tent and no one's mm-hmm. going to raid you. Without that, everything else slowly falls apart.
Yeah.
Or very quickly falls apart. You know, so it is the hub of the wheel.
Yeah.
That everything, and that's one thing we got to learn, is everything's connected. You can't just say over here, oh, that's alcohol, and over there is mental health, and over here is health care, and over here is education. Take one of them out of the component. It's a very basics of our medicine wheel teachings. You know, we have, you know, your mental, your physical, spiritual, and emotional. You take one of those out of the equation, and the rest start to fall apart, and it compounds and gets faster. So our services all have to be like that too.
Just to get back to kind of the nuts and bolts of the whole thing, I know, for example, that Edmonton has a program, and they're ahead of schedule on putting people in homes. And what's different there than Regina? Why are we not able to?
Well, you
do
have
this?
The politicals want to do it. You have to have people who want to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I know the mayor in Edmonton made that his personal goal.
Yeah. So when the mayor's on the phone talking to people, when you have developers coming in to build things,
yeah.
Well, you know, okay, if you're building this, well, then 10 of those units have to be low income.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't really do that here. Okay, that's fine. I can understand that. I can respect that too. So then you just give us $500,000. We'll put it in a kitty and put it towards one of our other social programs somewhere. Because, you know, and they say, well, if you do that, we won't be able to do business. Fine, go somewhere else. Oh, the boom happens to be here. Yeah, go build in New Brunswick, see how much money you're going to make. You know, it's the same mm-hmm. thing with potash. If you raise, you know, go get it somewhere else. Oh, there's only 3 places in the world to get it. Mm-hmm. So if you want it, it's here, and you have to contribute, you know, like, and it's not communism, it's not socialism, it's not anything. It's just a matter of treating people, you know, fairly and respectfully, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the whole First Nation, the whole Aboriginal component in there when you come into resources. We got to deal with this stuff.
Yeah.
And we got to do it in a respectful way.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And we haven't even talked about residential schools.
Oh, don't get me there.
Okay.
You know, today we got more kids in foster care than there ever was in residential school, so it hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed. The name has changed, and the settings have changed, but nothing's changed. Right. You know, it's the same thing. We just dress it up and call it something different now.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 years, when everybody catches on to that, you know, then, you know, it's then we'll address it, and then we change it up again, so. Canada's, we're not doing, you know, I was in the military, mm-hmm. and I served my country, and I'm very proud, you know, to be a Canadian, and it's not getting to be that so much anymore, you know, like, you know, it used to be, you went around the world, and you're a Canadian, you know, it's when we got out of peacekeeping, you know, when I was a peacekeeper, right, so... you know, that was we created that role, mm-hmm. you know, that was something that Canada created, right? And, was the whole United Nations peacekeeping thing. And once we got out of that role, you know, it was basically coming out of the end of Bosnia, you know, Sarajevo and all that. We started losing that. You know, you look at the stuff we're doing now and it's just crazy stuff, right? And the money that goes there, you know.
Well, when we were in Afghanistan, is about $1 billion a year, I think.
How much?
$1 billion.
True. And, you know, some of these things, you know, like, you know, the world's ever to face a Hitler again, well, yeah, I'd be the first one to go. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little old now, but I'd still go. But, you know, when, you know, we're looking at, you know, the mess that's been created in the Middle East and how it's all happened, you know, basically, we got you want to fight against tyranny is one thing, but when we're fighting to support corporations... You know, Iraq, prime example. Halliburton got every single contract there. Dick Cheney, vice president. It's just insanity, and I don't understand why people can't see that, right? Like, you know, we're sending our sons and daughters off to die because the country doesn't get any of that money. It's all private sector, this, that, and the other thing, right? And, you know, the companies make the money. And then just like Cameco here, then they don't even bother to pay what little tax they have to pay. They don't pay that. Mm-hmm. You know, they still owe Saskatchewan $350 million and Canada $500 million, and we're subsidizing them. This is insanity. People got to wake up to it. You know, it's the same thing. If I lie to the government, I go to jail. That's fraud, you know, misrepresentation. But the government can get up and lie to me, and they get a golden pen. You know, like, we got to start changing some of these things and become human beings. That's what we got to be. And it's not a matter about sexuality or orientation or race or religion or anything. It's about we're all human beings.
Just like to take we've got a few minutes left here, and I'd just like to ask you, Dan, if somebody wanted to help with what's going on here in the city now, how could they help?
In what, like for housing?
Financial, housing, like for this type of thing, like what you're working on there, how's the song?
Well, as long as you don't get flooded with phone calls, because, you know, well, we need another house, right? We need understanding, you know, landlord, that, you know, sometimes we bring people in, you know, and you're not going to get the rent. As soon as the guy gets there, we have to get the social service check, blah, 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 and do all that sort of stuff. What we need is we have to, because the government gets into this thing where they say, okay, for the next 3 years, this is what we're funding. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. It's written in stone. So a year later, half the world blows up. We can't change that. You know, we don't need that. All that blew up, and now, well, that's what we're funding. It's just crazy. They got to have the fluidity to be able to dance about and move about and say, okay, because what we need to do is my thing. We need to finance people on the ground. People, you know, kind of like jobs I do. I do outreach. I'm out on my office is my truck or 20 different little offices. Everyone thinks I work at Carmichael or APSS or All Nations Hope. Nobody thinks I work at, you know, the health region because I'm at all these other places all the time. So we need more and to support the people that we place. So, and we got to get rid of this idea of, you know, creating paperwork or paperwork. It's, you know, yes, we do have to do paperwork. We have to have numbers and stats, but sometimes it just gets a little too over daunting. So we need people that want to come in and developers. You know, if there's a philanthropist guy with $25 billion, you know, build a building where, you know, with your basic, say, $460 you get from welfare and you can get a rental supplement, let's say, $220, $225. So there's $680. So build a very nice, Milton Heights has them, very nice, big, large, you know, they're 2 years old now, but very clean, very large bachelors with a kitchen and a bathroom and two big closets that are, you know, you can put your bicycle in, you know, like a storage room and, you know, just a little closet. And they go out for like $600 a month, right? We can do that. So if they had that, then we could, people can take pride in where they live, and it helps. It's not a handout, it's a hand up, eh?
On that, Dan, I have to cut this off.
Thanks, Jim, for having me back.
It's been great talking to you, and just a privilege to to talk to you and hear the what the huge difference that you're making in this city.
Oh, well.
Anyway,
thanks.
And I just have time enough to say Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."